Tell me if this sounds familiar. You get together with your family, maybe for a holiday. After all the fun and good food, someone starts talking about, say, politics. Maybe a few people leave the table. For those that stay, the discussion gets tense, maybe even angry. Our next guest says that dynamic is in part because of a lot of us don't have the skills to make those conversations more compassionate and constructive. Diane Musho-Hamilton is an author, award-winning mediator, and a teacher of Zen. She's the co-author of the new book, Compassionate Conversations, How to Speak and Listen from the Heart. Diane, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, how common is this problem, Diane? We have this big issue in our lives, maybe personal, maybe political. We recognize the value in talking about it, but we just don't really have the skills to do it in a productive way.
Well, we all have good conversations every day where we get along and we agree and we present some level of difference. But when the differences are more threatening, it's harder to have a conversation. And in politics, our most deeply held values are at stake, so it often just feels a little more threatening.
When it comes to these tough issues, like, say, race or religious differences, things like that, there's one really easy approach, and that's that a lot of us, I think, take, and that's to avoid the topic, not talk about it all. What do we lose if we just don't take these things head on?
Well, it's as I said before, to really acknowledge how much we have in common, how much we actually do get along, and the fact that humans are one of the most cooperative species on the planet. But when our differences arise, they capture our attention because they affect our nervous system differently. So in the same way that, you know, when the nervous system is relaxed and we're listening and we feel the same as people, it feels one way. And then as soon as there are differences, the nervous system gets excited. There's adrenaline, there's cortisol. And as soon as that difference starts to become threatening, it's very difficult to remain in the conversation. But we lose our ability to actually hold multiple perspectives, to hear one another. And sometimes, as you know, it stresses our relationships. So a lot is lost when we're not willing to talk to each other.
I want to amplify that one point you made, because I pulled a quote from your book. Surprising as it may be, just discussing differences often feels threatening. Conversations about differences can easily provoke a fight or flight response. So in a way, our biology is actually making it harder for us to have these conversations?
Absolutely. That's what happens, is that the nervous system at rest feels one way. And when there's commonality, it's they call it the feed and breed nervous system. And as soon as we start to express differences, then all of a sudden our defense system starts to excite a little bit, and we will feel that dripping of cortisol and adrenaline. And it's very, lots of times when we even are trying to have a good conversation, we're doing a lot of coping. So it's important that we understand that about our nervous system, and we use listening to soothe ourselves. And then when we start to bring up differences, notice the excitement. And any time that we're overexcited or it starts to be threatening, just add more listening, more reflection, more joining. And when you do that, it'll calm everything down, and then you can bring up the differences again.
And you, in the book, you and your co-authors say, we can learn from your mediation skills by practicing a bit of meditation, by focusing on our breathing and things like that, to keep ourselves in the moment and to not let ourselves get distracted by that fight or flight response. Can you give us a concrete tip of how we can do that?
Yeah, so meditation and listening both have a lot in common. So I'm both a meditator and a mediator. So I would say that two things that can really be helpful is, one is when people start to feel their nervous system get excited in that way, to notice it, to just pay attention to it. And you can use the breath by simply noticing the inhale, lengthening the exhale. Even if you do it three times, four times, it will help to recalibrate your nervous system. And then just, if you can, just tune into the truth, whatever tiny relative truth that the other person is saying, and just reflect that back. So it may be, for instance, here's an example from this morning. My sister and brother live in different parts of the country. They're having different experiences around the virus. My sister lives in an urban center. It's much more threatening. My brother lives in Alaska, so his emphasis is on the economy. My sister told me she did a really good job of reflecting that, yeah, it's really, really important that we get the economy started. And it may be different, you know, in places where there's more population. So it's great that things are a little more gentle in Alaska, and here where I'm living, things are a little bit more stressed. So there's a way to kind of listen, join, create relaxation, and then just present some differences in a way that are respectful, but you don't have to just move away. So that's an example.
We're talking to Diane Musho-Hamilton, co-author of the new book, Compassionate Conversations, How to Speak and Listen from the heart. I want to key in on another quote that I definitely have witnessed a lot in my life. Here it is. Typically, most of us engage in conversations about race, gender, politics, or religion, not to grow our heart, but to confirm our own personal beliefs and perceptions, including proving others wrong. How can we find a better starting point for a conversation than showing that I'm right and you're wrong?
Well, the thing about conversation is that it's an art form. So if you get just the right amount of commonality, it's like good music. There's a really consistent rhythm section that creates a kind of an undertone that carries the melody. And then the differences are like the melody. And so it makes it exciting and interesting. And we learn a lot. And we actually grow through the encounter with difference. So unless we're willing to encounter difference and talk about it, our perspectives don't change. Our world doesn't get bigger. We don't have new insights. So growth is really related to the encounter with difference. Even evolution works that way. It moves from sameness to difference, and then it becomes more complex and more complex. And that's how we grow and change as well. When we need to be right, when everything becomes kind of a win-lose proposition, we usually end up feeling separate, alienated, and the fulfillment and the gratification of a good conversation is lost because it's simply a win-lose, zero-sum situation.
Can we train ourselves, or I guess get trained, to become better at having these kind of conversations?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's good for us to start. If you, for instance, if you pick up the book, the things that I emphasize are, first of all, really get to know your nervous system and pay attention to when it's relaxed and when it becomes elevated or threatened. The second thing is really develop your listening skills so that anytime you want, when something is too stressful, you can simply learn how to reflect and join with and lower the stress levels, and then present your differences in a way that are exciting and not threatening. And then finally, always finish conversations by reiterating the area of commonality. What is it that we actually agree about? We agree that we all want everyone to feel safe. We want people to be healthy, and we want people to have jobs and be able to pay their mortgages. Those are all things that we agree about. We should be able to have that conversation.
You've mentioned those listening skills a few times, and you use the phrase a reflective listening in the book. Can you spell out what that means?
Yeah, sometimes it's referred to as active listening. So basically, it's the skill of simply repeating and really finding a way to see the truth in what you hear someone say. So listening doesn't mean agreement. That's important. It doesn't mean agreement, but it means that you give them the experience that you've heard what they've said, you repeat some of the language, and you basically give them the experience that they've been heard. Listening is not about what you heard. It's about the experience that you give the speaker. Does the speaker feel heard? Because when people feel heard, they relax.
A lot of the examples in your book focus on issues related to race here in the United States. Can you offer some tips for conversations, especially when you have people from maybe different racial backgrounds, white and black, different experiences, mm-hmm. different levels of privilege in their lives, whether or not they think mm-hmm. of it consciously as privilege? How can we get started mm-hmm. on what's that very sensitive topic?
Well, I think that, again, what is it we all have in common, and that we all have life experience in which we've suffered, and we all have life experience in which things have been challenging or we've experienced loss. If you're in a position of more privilege or more power, in this case, if you're a person who's white, your obligation at this point right now in history is to listen, because we've had really different experiences and we need to be educated about what people of color experience on a daily basis that we don't. And when you become a good listener and you actually join with and reflect the truths and the differences, and that you demonstrate an interest in really caring about what other people's experience is, it's amazing how much can be accomplished in conversation. A lot of energy gets wasted when people feel that they're being accused or being told they've done something wrong. It's really not about that. It's really about being willing just to hear an experience that's vastly different from your own. And then once people establish rapport, then it's really nice for regardless of what your race or your identity is, to be able to exchange truths. But in certain situations, like sometimes I would say for males, it's nice to listen for a little while before you assert your truths, just because maybe for a lot of women, they haven't been listened to quite as easily or well. So in this case, it's just a little bit of courtesy, of giving people the experience who haven't had their voice be heard as readily, to actually give them the experience that they're being seen and heard. It's important.
We're talking to author and mediator Diane Musho Hamilton. Her latest book, she's the co-author of Compassionate Conversations, How to Speak and Listen from the Heart. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you deal with uncomfortable conversations about things like politics or race? Do you find these conversations typically turning into arguments for you? Have you found maybe a better way to talk about topics between you and your family or someone else you disagree with? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about how to have more compassionate and constructive conversations, even with people we disagree with, especially with people that we have disagreements with. Diane Musho Hamilton is with us, author of the new book, Compassionate Conversations, How to Speak and Listen from the Heart. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a story of a tough conversation you had recently and how it went for you with a friend or loved one or maybe a stranger, classmate, coworker? Are you someone who avoids people who think differently than you do? Or do you have people in your life from different backgrounds and you value communicating and sharing the things that are the same about you and the things that are different about your experiences? Do you have questions for our guest about how to have better, more productive conversations? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Diane, you and your co-authors in the book talk about, some of us might lean more toward rationality and pride ourselves on being very reasonable and logical in our conversations. Other people might lead more with their emotions. You say we need some of both. Can you tell us how to set that balance?
Yes, well, there is a difference lots of times when people engage in that some people really have a very logical, linear, and rational way of expressing themselves, and some people are, and they're much more considered maybe before they speak, and other people speak from the heart or from the gut, and there's more emotion and energy. And what we know is that we love both, you know, because when we have conversations that have emotion, they're usually energized, and when we have conversations with rationality, they can be quite calming and help us understand what a strategy to move forward might be. So I think it's really important that we engage kind of our gut, our heart, and our rationality in our conversations, because that's where the most life force is when we have all three of our centers, keeping in mind that rationality does help us to calm down and also, but you have to, what helps us calm down more than anything is to be heard. So I'm going back to listening skills and back to giving people the experience they've been heard and valued.
Let's talk about when things go wrong. We're not perfect. We might have had that conversation where we weren't at our best. Mm-hmm. How do we come back to, say, that friend or coworker or whatever and reopen the door that may have felt like it slammed shut?
Okay, it's just kind of a simple regrouping. You know, you might say something like, oh, that conversation got away from me the other day. I really care about what it is you have to say, and I don't feel like I listened very well. Would you mind reopening it? And then if you do a good job of listening, you could say, that sounds really reasonable. Are you interested in hearing my perspective on that? Because I still do have a difference with you. So it's just a matter of regrouping. I always tell my students, it's not what you do, it's what you do next. And usually people will want to reengage. So I think, and the only way for us to learn, of course, is to practice over and over and over and over, and then we get better at it. So coming back to someone is a good idea.
Now, you and your colleagues have worked with people in workplace settings, academic settings, and even looked at, I think, places after major, conflicts within nations, civil wars, things like that. I imagine at some of those points, things looked hopeless to some of the participants. There's no hope of building a bridge. Is there always some kind of hope?
You know, I think that, the willingness of human beings to engage and get along is really, really high. And there are often structural problems. There are often inequities that are difficult to surmount. So there are genuine obstacles that have to be overcome sometimes for people to be brought together. But, sometimes when that happens in groups that I work with, I will just allow groups to split up, kind of go to their own sides, take a while to just talk among themselves and say, you know, is there anything that you can do differently that would actually help us to succeed? And I ask each small group to do that, and almost inevitably they find things they can do differently. You know, it's difficult. It's difficult when you work with really, really multi-generational conflicts, or conflicts in which real, genuine resources are at stake, or conflicts in which they're just structural problems. Around, you know, I worked in a mediation where a fraternity house was located in a really quiet neighborhood, and that was just a structural problem. There's almost no solution to that except to move the fraternity house out of the neighborhood. So sometimes you just have to make changes so that you can get to a result. And these things often take time. You know, I always tell people, keep in mind that when we learn about having conversation, every important social movement is based on years and years and years of people talking to each other. And sometimes it takes a really long time to get to where we want to be, but it's always worth it, and there's always hope.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ruth is with us in Eau Claire. Ruth, hi.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how one begins to open something up, because when somebody believes that having a visceral response means that they're right, that it's how they gauge whether or not they're mm-hmm. right, because they mm-hmm. have a visceral response. You know, your comment about fight and flight is really mm-hmm. a good one, and I appreciated that. But how mm-hmm. might you, as a mediator, touch mm-hmm. on that or begin to open the door a little bit where, you know, there are people who hold that belief?
Yeah, well, and also I would just mention that different families, different cultures, different groups have different tolerances for emotional expression. And sometimes when I'm working with a group, I'll say, hey, we're going to talk about this hot topic. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much emotion can this group tolerate? So certain groups, you'll find that 2 or 3 is all they can really take, and other groups, it's like 8 or 9. So my suggestion would be if you're in a conversation with someone who kind of, there's a lot of emotional intensity, and that equates to their being right. You could say something like, I really want to have this conversation, and what I notice is when the emotional intensity gets so high, I lose my ability to listen, and I really want to be able to hear what you have to say. Could we kind of try to keep it at like a 3 or 4 just so I can stay present? Something like that.
Ruth, thanks a lot for that call. I hope that helps. We are talking about having good, productive conversations about difficult issues. We have Diane Musho-Hamilton with us. She's co-author of the book, Compassionate Conversations, How to Speak and Listen from the Heart. Diane, a lot of what you're saying makes me think, you know, a big part of this is listening to other people, but a lot of it seems like it's listening to clues and cues coming from within ourselves, too.
Absolutely. What an absolutely great insight. We have to become equally as good at listening to ourselves, what's happening in our body, what kind of emotions that we happen to be feeling, what are the most important thoughts that we're having. So listening to ourselves so that we can express ourselves is every bit as important as listening to others. But listening to others will always calm the situation, will always calm it. And then you can kind of prepare the ground to bring up your difference. So it takes some generosity to be the person to do the listening first, but the better that we get at it, the more we create kind of an open field in which our differences can excite and stimulate us without coming between us.
Now, we live in a country where we, you know, we hear talk about political polarization a lot. Mm-hmm. It seems like yeah. we're not real good at listening to each other sometimes. From your vantage mm-hmm. point, though, working with actual, you know, individuals, not just sort of these big picture groups, do you feel optimistic yeah. that we can do this?
Oh, yeah, I think so for sure. I think we're getting better and better and better at it. I believe that one of the first chapter in the book is really about, I really like people to think about conversation as a skill that we're acquiring, that literally is part of our development and our evolution, that we're getting better and better at it. And that, you know, for some people, even the idea that there could be two perspectives that are equally valid, that will create anxiety. And so they'll drop back and just cling to one truth. But over time, people get better and better and better at seeing how multiple perspectives can have truths. And then they get better at being able to hold that complexity. So that's an acquired skill. And after 40 years of practicing, I still notice times when I'm good at it and times when I'm not very good at it. So I tell people, just keep in mind, we're building the pyramids here. This is going to take time, but look how far we've come.
You can see where this would have a social benefit. Is there a case to be made that if we open ourselves up to other people's experiences, even if we don't, you know, change our minds as a result, that we're living a richer life ourselves?
I think so. Absolutely. I mean, if you think about any time we've ever learned anything, it's from somebody who knows something we don't, who is better at something than we are, who's had more of a particular kind of experience. And so we don't grow unless we open up to these differences. Now, again, you know, it's one thing to open up to someone who's interested in exchanging with you, who has a different experience, than somebody who attacks you. It's much harder when someone's attacking you. But even over time, you can start to learn how to, you know, sort of let that drift, if you will, and just go for what is it they're saying that's important to them.
Briefly, do you have thoughts? A lot of our interactions with acquaintances and strangers, especially these days, are online. Do you have a quick thought on how to listen, even though it's just, you know, text from somebody in another house somewhere?
Well, again, you know, I guess I'm kind of, you know, harping on this a little bit, but I think one of the challenges of online, whether it's email or text or whatever, is we never reflect. We never say, so is what you're saying dot, 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 or do I understand that dot, dot, dot? We just simply respond. And lots of times we haven't actually heard the message clearly. And that's why the reflection can be so helpful. It's just to say, here's what I think I hear you saying. Is that right? Just take a minute to do that. It can make a huge difference.
Diane, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Really appreciate it.
That's Diane Musho-Hamilton, mediator and co-author of the new book we've been talking about. It's called Compassionate Conversations, How to Speak and Listen from the Heart.